future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Welcome to Raging Chickens Out the Coop Live. Yes, it is our call-in show for Monday, December 7th, 2020. Here on Out the Coop Live, we talk to progressives, activists, and troublemakers of all sorts from our own backyards and from across the country. Out the Coop Live joins our Friday show, where some of you may already be familiar with that, where Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. But you can get both by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. But you can only join the conversation live through our Podbean app on Mondays. Or, you know, if you watch it on our YouTube show right now, too, as well. We got a good number of folks in the YouTube on the YouTube channel, too, as well. That's great. You can help support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month at patreon.com/rcpress. And if you're not ready to become a patron, you can make a one-time gift in any amount at paypal.me/rcpress. And if you're listening to this show live on the Podbean app, you can show us some love right now. You can drop a few bucks in our tip jar by clicking on that little gift icon in the bottom of your app. All right, you fill your digital pockets with Podbean's, I swear to God they call them this, golden beans, and send us a gift of your choice. Every gift you send helps support and expand this podcast. And if you're looking for more PA-based progressive talk, tune into The Rick Smith Show live at 9 p.m. Eastern. Any of his streams, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, everywhere you're looking. And be sure to subscribe to his daily podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And a special shout out to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at @SongADayMan. That's @SongADayMan with two N's. His last name is Mann with two N's, so @SongADayMan. So on today's show, I'll admit right off the bat, I'm totally excited. I'm excited about this, kind of all weekend. I'm joined by Shanna Danielson and Tara Shakespeare. Danielson was a candidate for PA State Senate in Senate District 31, PA State Senate District 31, and Shakespeare was a candidate in PA State PA State Representative in the 88th District. Both of these districts are in PA's Capital Region, a region that has been all but written off by mainstream Democrats in recent years. But thanks to the grassroots power-building campaigns by Danielson and Shakespeare and a number of other progressive women in the Capital Region, Republicans and conservatives are not feeling so comfortable anymore in that area. While Danielson and Shakespeare did not win the election this cycle, the region they ran in saw some of the largest shift toward Democrats in the entire state. Right. This is what it means. Have you heard us talk about in the show before to kind of invest in building power, not simply for elections, but over the long haul? This is a perfect example of this. And we'll be talking about running unapologetically progressive grassroots campaign in areas of the state considered to be out of reach by Democrats. All that is changing as a ways of progressive women dug in and built powerful campaigns in 2020. Welcome to the show. Welcome, Shanna, and welcome, Tara. I'm so happy to have you tonight.
Thank you. Yeah, well, thank you for having us.
Well, I've got to say, you know, that I remember right after the election, I believe this is right after the election. I should click my little link here and make sure of the date here. But it was right after the election when there was all this kind of dust up about, Biden won the campaign, but we lost seats in the House and all this kind of stuff. People were blaming the left. They were blaming progressives and all this. And, you know, Nikhil Saval put out this tweet, right, he kind of referred to both of you in the tweet. Right. And he said that, you know, there's a map of the state of Pennsylvania and there's, you know, everything is shaded different colors from dark blue to dark red and every shade in between. And one of the darkest blues, right, and that basically, the darker the blue, the more of a shift there was towards Democrats. Darker the red, more towards Republicans. One of the darkest blues on the map was where you all ran, right? And one of the things that he says, that dark blue county in the center, in the central southern part of the state is Cumberland County. There were three progressives running for local office there, right? Shanna, you, Tara, you, and Nicole Miller, right, for PA House. And it shifted 5.7% towards Biden, right? So that was a huge thing. And I think that comment, right, really kind of put in my mind like the value kind of what it means, you know, the value of running the kind of campaigns that you all run, right? So, you know, first of all, just thanks to both of you, right, for putting in the time and the effort and kind of really dedicating kind of a year plus of your lives to get to this point. So,
yes, it is a year plus. So I just want to respond real quick. This is Tara, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
I know sometimes it's hard to tell voices for people who are listening. But, you know, Senator Sabal's tweet was like so heartwarming for me because it matters so much that races like mine and Nicole's and Shanna's, that obviously it's disappointing when you don't win, but every election is not just about that election. It is not necessarily about the candidate. It is about progress. And sometimes that means you don't win. So, you know, Nikhil's tweet kind of exemplifies that, because even though you don't win your race, the state wins something regardless. And the community wins something regardless, and progress, while slow and frustrating, does happen.
Absolutely. And this is one of the things, one of the lessons I hope that, say, state Democrats really take away from this, is that there's a lot of fights that are worth fighting, even if you lose them, right? Because it's not just for, you know, that little thing that's at the end of our noses, but it's like the long haul. If we're actually serious about building power and, you know, moving things in a more progressive direction. So what I'd like to kind of start with a little bit for, I mean, I would assume that a lot of folks that will be tuning in tonight or listening to our podcast over there are familiar with both the races you have, but still, I, you know, like to get a little bit about your backstory, about why it is that you decided to run for the office and in the kind of district that you did. Because, I mean, you all know this firsthand, right? I mean, I followed both of your campaigns. You all know that, like, you know, you didn't have kind of like, you know, people coming out of the woodwork in the Democratic Party or anyone saying like, oh yeah, that's a great race to run. It's a great place to run in, right? This is the place. I'll tell you this story before I move in. This is, I remember, this is years ago, probably before 2016, probably a 2014 election cycle. And a friend of mine was working out in Harrisburg, had taken me and a friend of mine to kind of this campaign office. I'll leave it very amorphous. Does not identify the place. And there's a big map on the wall. Right. And the map on the wall was every county and every district in the state of Pennsylvania. And, you know, we're kind of looking at it and he's just like, I just wanted to show you this. We're looking at it like, well, what are you showing us? Like, well, what do you notice? I'm like, well, there's a lot of blank spaces up there. Said, yes. Those are all the districts that the Democrats will not even contest the election. Right. They won't even put up somebody to run. Right, because they think it's worthless. And what I saw this election cycle, and in 2018 for that matter, was a kind of like a repudiation of that kind of like historic model. By going, say, so let's go forward. We're going to contest, and we're going to build power for the long haul. So that's awesome. So Shanna, let me turn to you first and think about and you know, a little bit about what got you to this place. Like, why did you, you know, kind of your music teacher, right? You know, and, you know, and you kind of decide that, okay, I'm going to stand up in a district that is not like, you know, super like have open arms to all Democrats. It's not this like blue county that everyone runs in, but you ran anyways, right? Talk a little bit about kind of what got you to that point.
Sure. Oh man, I feel like the whole last couple of years is just such a blur. But I actually ran, and you know this mm-hmm. because this is when I started listening to the podcast 2 years ago. I ran for state house in an even worse situation in Northern York County, where, I mean, it's going to be, never mind, I don't want to talk about it. It's too depressing. But I had no idea what I was doing. Like, we had moved here a few years earlier. I had spent the first part of my career teaching up in Cameron County, where there are more elks than humans. And, you know, like, there was no way to get involved. I thought there were 5 Democrats in my town, and they all lived on my street, and they were all teachers. Like, that was just the world that I had lived in. So when we came down here, it just felt like the whole world was like, at my disposal now. And, like, what was I going to do with it? So I got involved with Moms Demand Action, and, you know, that was an issue that's very personal to me. I had a really traumatic active shooter drill situation at my previous job, and I, you know, was a new parent, and so gun violence prevention was just a thing where I felt like I'm going to get involved here. And then a month later, I had an ad for an Indivisible meeting, and I was like, oh, cool, like I'm going to go to this too. I've heard about that on the interwebs. Yeah. And so within a span of about 2 months from attending that mom's meeting to petition time in 18, I found myself running for state rep. Like, this is not how you're supposed to run for office. You're supposed to, like, have some kind of idea what the hell you're doing. And that was very much not my path. My path was, I'm in a room with, like, 50 people who I've never seen before, and they're telling me I should do it, and, like, hopefully they're not axe murderers, and sure, let's do the damn thing. So, I mean, they became, like, almost instantaneously, this group of people became like a second family to me. We had no clue what we were doing, but we learned. You know, we figured it out as we went, and we lost, but we did better than anyone thought we would, especially considering the party gives zero craps about anyone running in York County.
I remember people being shocked at how well you did. They were like, literally, like, mouths agape. Like, seriously.
Yes, good. Well, they can keep their mouths agape, because exactly. I don't know what I'm doing next, but I'm not done. Anyway, so out of that campaign, we formed the Northern York Democratic Club, which is this kick-ass, amazing group of people who are going to change the world, and we're already doing it. And then I did Emerge, and through the Emerge training program, I met some incredible people.
Tell people what Emerge is for if they're not familiar with
it. Oh, sure. Yeah, so Emerge is a training program for Democratic women who want to run for office, like for any office, from school board to president. I don't think a president has gone through there yet. Obviously, we're still working on that, but fantastic, fantastic program. And it was just incredible to spend all this time with these women who, you know, Kendra Brooks was in my Emerge class, and Monica Taylor, who is a county commissioner or council, whatever they call it in wherever she lives, and just all these incredible people. And Monica actually is the reason why I ran, because she said to me, like, why don't you run for state senate? We did these mock interviews, and I pretended I was going to run for senate. I had no idea, you know, I had zero intentions of ever doing that. And she said, well, why don't you? And I was like, no, that's crazy. But then it's like deja vu, 2018, and then I was running for state senate. Yeah, I mean, I'm a mom, I'm a teacher, I care about issues, I'm a working class human who has more student debt than any person alive should have to deal with. And we've gone through periods of not having health insurance. And, like, you know, I'm just everyone, I'm just a normal human who is really pissed off that the world sucks. And so I wanted to do something about it, because I also have stupid blind ambition and don't know how to say no to things. But I actually view that as a strength. And we ran an incredible kick-ass campaign, and we lost, but, like, I'm not really sad that we lost, because we did such an incredible thing, and it feels really good to have been part of, like you were mentioning, you know, that huge swift for Biden. But the reason I ran here is, number one, I live here, obviously, but, you know, Governor Wolf actually won my district in 18. Mm-hmm. So if we would have run the race we ran, you know, if the seat would have been up 2 years ago, things might have been different.
Yep.
But it was also a very similar situation where he was up against a complete psychopath in Scott Wagner, and Wolf carried the district, but every other Democrat on the ballot lost. And so it was kind of the same thing here. It's instead of Scott Wagner, it was Donald Trump. So magnify everything. But we managed to actually scare my opponent, and we can talk more about nitty gritty about the race later. But no, I feel really good about what we did. I feel really good about building power here, because we know that this region is going to be the region that changes, you know, that changes Pennsylvania. And I'm really excited to kind of be at the forefront of that.
That's fantastic. You know what? One of the things I remember kind of after the election, too, as well, of not feeling and seeing this actually in social media, too, as well. There wasn't this big kind of like depression. It was more like, okay, now we get to build even more. That's the energy felt like. So how about you, Tara? I mean, how do you come in? Because this was your first run, right?
Oh yeah. For anything. Yes.
For anything. So walk us through that. What got you here?
I don't know. No. I don't have a political background. I am, you know, a small business professional, basically. I've spent my career at small businesses doing finance and HR work. after Donald Trump got elected, I was pretty angry. Not gonna lie, I'm still pretty angry. You know, the fact that we elected somebody who has been credibly accused, you know, 20 some times of sexual assault, who, you know, the racism, the xenophobia, just all of it. And it kind of lit a fire in me. Like I know it did for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I got really involved with Harrisburg Area Now, which is the national organization for women. I was the treasurer for a while. I was president for a little bit. And I felt like I needed to do something more. And I wasn't sure exactly what that was, but I thought, okay, well, maybe I can get a little bit involved in politics. My sister-in-law is involved with an organization called Progressive Pints, and they were helping a state representative candidate in this area running in 2018. So I helped out a little bit there, and from there went on to become a precinct committee person for the Cumberland County Democratic Party. And I loved it. Like, I loved knocking on doors and talking to people and encouraging them to vote and asking them, you know, what issues are important to you? Like, what is driving you to the polls? How can I answer your questions about these candidates? Because I think for a lot of regular people, when they're like, okay, what does my township commissioner do?
Mm-hmm.
They think that their township commissioner just writes checks. And there's a lot of lack of information about what these people, these elected officials are supposed to be doing, what they actually do. And finding that information is like impossible. Like, it is so hard to figure out what your elected officials are doing.
Yeah.
At any given moment, you know, and so I had a hard time figuring out what my elected officials were doing. And once I did, I was shocked. So my former opponent, who I ran against, I thought, oh, she's a woman.
So she's she's on the good side of things, right?
That's something.
Not so much.
At least, right? Like, right. Okay, at least she's a woman. At least she's out there probably doing something to protect my rights as a woman and as a resident. And oh my God, I was wrong. I was really wrong. I found out in late 2019, I was not ever going to run for office. I am something of an introvert, and running for office like was never in the cards for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to help other people run. We tried very, very hard to find someone to run for this seat, and we could not. We couldn't find anyone that wanted to run. And I was like, well, that's not acceptable.
Right.
I found out that my former opponent voted in favor of something called a fetal remains bill. And a lot of people won't necessarily know what that is, but I do. I'm a woman who has dealt with recurrent miscarriages. One of those miscarriages, I ended up opting for an abortion of a very much wanted pregnancy, which was just truly devastating.
Mm-hmm.
And so fetal remains bills are actually our state legislature's way of punishing women who seek out reproductive care in the form of abortion. And so women like me who have to abort a wanted fetus, and women who choose abortion for literally any other reason that they're legally entitled to, would have to go through the added expense and trauma of burying their fetal remains against their will. And that is a trauma that I cannot imagine.
That was brutal. Like I remember that bill and how freaking we've been through that too. I mean, yeah. Obviously me not personally, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And I couldn't even imagine a situation like that.
Yes. And it's like, I chose to have an abortion, because I was miscarrying. But women choose to have abortions for all kinds of different reasons. And the fact that I have now said abortion like 6 times, let me tell you, makes everyone very, very uncomfortable. and it shouldn't. It doesn't have to. Like, this is a you know, medical procedure that I know so many women who have had BNCs and and, you know, medical abortion facility that I have, for whatever reason, and this is basic healthcare, but it is like the boogeyman to people, which is just really, really unfortunate. And the fact that my own state representative, who I thought, oh, she's a woman, there's no way that she could be voting to harm people like me and people seeking, you know, reproductive justice and reproductive freedom. And it was like, oh yeah, yeah, she did. And as soon as I really started to grasp what else she was up to, I was just appalled. You know, the lack of transparency, you know, just, I know that everyone says that Democrats are tax and spend Democrats. No. Republicans love to tax regular people and spend it on giant corporations and polluters. And it's like, I come from this background of finance and human resources, and like in a small business, you watch every penny, and our government doesn't do that. Like, they are willy-nilly spending on bananas things, and denying us basic services. So long story short, I was like, well, she can't run unopposed. That's completely unacceptable. This isn't about me, and which is weird, like when you're running as a candidate. But it wasn't about me. Like, it was not a race about me. It was a race about, this isn't the last election that we're going to have. We have to move forward in Cumberland County. We are one of the fastest growing counties in Pennsylvania. Things are changing. We have to have candidates that reflect that growth and that change.
Well, and I also think that, you know, it's that, it's having the candidates means that you actually have organizations and other people to go to, right? I mean, just the story that you just told about trying to figure out, like, what the hell do these people actually do, right? And how do you learn about what's happening in local politics? It's the biggest irony in the world, I think, when you start thinking about, like, you know, like the nitty gritty of politics of, you know, it's sometimes it's easier to figure out what people are doing in Washington, D.C. than it is right down the street.
Absolutely.
And it's, and I think that it becomes one of the biggest barriers of engaging in, you know, the politics in your kind of city council, right, or kind of county government. And part of that is, you know, having someone, organization or individual like you in this case, say, kind of break that barrier, right, where somebody can feel like, oh, okay, there is a place to go. Right. I can see, like, now I see an organization and a group of other people that are talking about this stuff, and it becomes, you know, kind of like an, like, you know, a public education. Right. Yeah. In for not just like you said, not just your campaign. Right. But for the community as a whole. And how do you begin to actually kind of enact collective power?
Yeah. And I think that that's one of the reasons why people like AOC so much. You know, typically Congress and a lot of our elected officials are viewed as otherworldly, like they have some magical special powers that, like, we, you know, the regular working folks of whatever area it is, we don't get any insight into. In AOC, and I know we have some of our newly elected Democrats in the state house right now are doing something similar, and they are making it every day so that we can see, okay, this is what our state legislature is actually up to, which is amazing. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why people gravitate to AOC and, like, why Shanna's campaign resonated so much with people, because I'm a, like, Shanna's a regular person who is going through this experience with everybody, not separate and apart. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and Shanna, this is one of the things I want. I mean, one of the things that struck me early on when you ran your last campaign too as well, and you carried it right into this one. And like you said, is like the organizations that you've been part of and helped build, right, is like, if you look at your, like, campaign shots, or even, you know, just things that were posted on Facebook as part of rallies, I think you got, like a T-shirt from a different organization every other thing, you know? But it, that always stood out as, like, one of the markers of your campaign, right? And markers of how you, like, you do politics, right, is kind of embedded with kind of movements. And you know, everyone I talk to is either say worked on your campaign or has been part of, you know, part of the organizations that you've been part of, will always talk about that. As you feel like, okay, you know, if we want to get Shanna like into Harrisburg, because that means we're all going to Harrisburg, mm-hmm. right? I mean, again, I know it's like across the river, but you know, but you know what I'm saying. It's like, and it always had that sense. And I have to say, so that kind of power was impressive, especially going up against like Mike Regan, who's like one of the most horrible human beings. I'm sorry, but like, I'm sorry.
Don't
like,
apologize.
No,
he's
but
trash.
I'm like, I mean, seriously. I mean, I'll say it here. I mean, you don't have to, but I'll say the guy's a scumbag, right? I mean, he's like, and what he's done politically has been unconscionable in so many ways. And to see him, the contrasting kind of mode of politics, it was amazing. So, you know, I don't know what my question is with that, but I'm just going to hand it to you on that one.
Well, so I will share a brief moment of poetic justice, and then I'm not bitter because I know where I live and I always knew that it was going to be half miracle, right? But the brief bit of poetic justice, and people may argue with me on this, is that Mike Regan had these great aspirations of either running for governor or Senate, and it looks like the whole like winds of the Republican Party are behind Doug Mastriano. Yes. And so it's like that he is about to be like out-skeezed by Mastriano is just like this moment of like zen for me. Like there go your future aspirations, unless you also want to catch COVID and go hang out or whatever. Like, he was like, at that thing.
It's like, sorry, right-wing scumbag, you're being outdone by a fascist. Sorry.
I mean, but like he's right there with
right.
them. Yes. And so the thing that was great about our campaign was us, and the thing that sucked was him. And so I think a lot of people know what he has, you know, what everybody in Harrisburg knows what he has or potentially has not done, but what everyone thinks he has done in his office. And we couldn't go public with stuff like that because if there's no paper trail, you know, it's just different for a teacher and a mom, you know, to go negative, even if it's true. But then I was thinking to myself this whole time, like, it doesn't matter because this is why people like Trump. They like Trump because he's gross, right? And it's the same thing. Like Regan put out an ad of he couldn't find the milk in his own refrigerator or remember his kids' names. And I'm like, if I did something like that, the people would be crying incompetence.
Can you imagine?
And then we got the endorsement from the newspaper and he threw this like temper tantrum saying that I was not qualified. I'm just a woman. I'm too young. And like the things that he was saying, and it's just like, you have this moment where it's like, I may be just this to you, mm-hmm. but we have so many people that were powering this race. You know, like I had the most incredible staff. My campaign manager is the best at what he does. He's phenomenal. And I think everyone should hire him for everything because he's just so damn good. seriously, Tara can back me up here. He was amazing. My field director, Chris, is on and he was helping us with volunteer recruitment. Like I had such an incredible team. Running with such amazing fellow candidates in this region. You know, Eugene was running. We had hundreds of volunteers, thousands of donors. Like, we did that. The party was not rushing in to be like, hey, how can we help you? I won't say they were hostile. They weren't hostile to us, but we always knew we were not their trophy race. We knew that we were not in a very easily winnable seat. But we worked harder than most of those tier one races. And I will take that. I will argue this to my grave. Sorry. And Kara, I thought I said Kara. I might not have, but my field director was also amazing. Thank you, Chris. But, you know, we did all that because people believed in us. And I came through a three-way primary. It wasn't like I just like waltzed into it this time because no one else was doing it. Like we had to work for it. And then, freaking pandemic. You can't knock doors. You can't connect with people. I mean, we did all this work. I quit my job. Like this was a big commitment and I have zero regrets about it because I know just from the communications we've had with folks all over the state. I mean, people were so invested in our race, and in me, and it wasn't, you know, it's not like I'm the most dynamic human, but it makes a big difference when you have a candidate who can connect with people and who has a personality for Pete's sake.
Exactly. It's not simply just like a poll tested kind of cardboard cutout that seems to tick all these boxes, but as somebody who's actually invested with real people, having real conversations, real human beings speaking to real human beings about real human problems. right? Yeah. I mean, and that makes such a fundamental difference. And, you know, again, you know, I know, Shanna, you've listened to the show before, so you know that we're not exactly kind of like loving on Democrats all the time. but, you know, it's like one of these things. It's one of these things that's it's about, you know, it's not love out of hate, right? It's or it's not hate out of how to say it? It's not like going after the Democrats because you hate Democrats. We're like, I go up, you know, because I want them to be better, right?
Yes,
I mean,
sure.
We need them to be better, right? And
yeah.
One of the things that struck me about, you know, both of your campaigns, right? And we could put Nicole Miller in there. Like, I talked to Tara Zirinsky, we had her on the show right before the election, who was amazing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talked to Rick Kajewski down in West Philly, right? About his race, mm-hmm. and like all the folks that are going to be coming to Harrisburg and helping to, you know, further build those campaigns, like build the organizations that you all have been part of building. You know, I think about it as like, okay, if the statewide Democratic Party, you know, forget the national party for now, right? But the statewide Democratic Party, if they're not going to get behind and see the value of this right now, it almost becomes irrelevant, right? It almost becomes the point where, you know, we have movements and organizations that are showing the leadership, right, how to do power politics, right? How to work in order to build power and build organization. And I think about those, you know, the West Virginia teachers, right? And the Arizona mm-hmm. teachers and the Oklahoma teachers who showed their own union leaders, right, that they were not a threat by going out on strike, for example, right? They showed them a path to power so that the leadership could have the courage to get behind them. And I see a little bit of that happening right now. I don't want to be too optimistic here because I'm known as always the dark cloud in the room. So I don't want to get too, you know, over my skis a little too much here. But I do think there's that possibility moving forward. I mean, I don't know what you think about that kind of, you know, what, from your experience kind of looking forward about building power in this state. You know, is it the kind of sunny picture that I'm best sunny version I guess I can do is paint, or is it more complicated than that?
I think it's a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Tara, I'm just going to, while it's on my mind. So having done this before and seen kind of the shifts this time, I'm going to leave my opinions on the organization of the party for another time. I'm on state committee. So like now that I'm not an active candidate, I'm really looking forward to these meetings and being able to be a little more vocal. But you know, we're not waiting for the party. We're not. And nothing against our county parties either, but they're not used to, like, I'm not trying to be offensive, but they're not used to being relevant because it's only been the last couple years that anyone's even been paying any damn attention out here. And that's just since they redrew the congressional lines in 18. So like the county parties are doing what they can, but they've never had to be a machine because there wasn't really the infrastructure, and there still isn't. And so it's being built, but it's being built by a lot of clubs, a lot of organizations. And I credit a lot of the success of my race to PA Stands Up.
I was going to say, yep.
Because they, I mean, that was the infrastructure, all the calls, all the texts. Senator-elect Saval is a
you getting
saint.
All formal and proper.
I mean him no disrespect because I love him. He is a good friend of mine. We did call time together every week. He was like a rock for my race. And it's because he genuinely cared. You know, he saw the potential here. Representative Fiedler was very much a part of this as well. Rick. And so to have their buy-in, basically all of the Philly political machine was also like kind of, you know, like guest central Pennsylvanians for a while, because that's who was on our phone banks. That's who was doing the texting. Like, yeah. These people were incredible, incredible, incredible. And it's because we're not waiting for the party. Like, right. We're sick and tired of waiting for someone to come in and save us. We're going to roll up our sleeves and we're going to do it ourselves. And, you know, that's what really excites me. That's what I want to continue to do in one way or another. It's not about the party, because the party has a lot of freaking work to do to figure out what they even stand for before they can, you know, really try to get people into positions of power. I don't think they would know what to do with the majority if they got it. And so I'm really excited to be part of, you know, like PA Stands Up and organizations like this who are, we're not waiting. You know, we're saying to hell with your imposter syndrome. We're not waiting. We're going to do it. Like, have you seen Daryl Metcalf? Anyone can do this job better
exactly.
than Daryl Metcalf. So like,
exactly.
And Dawn Kiefer, my state rep, who is now on this newest lawsuit I just saw Representative Kenyatta post about. Like, these Tea Party Barbie is in the State House right now. Like, we can do better than this. And so, you know.
We could definitely do it. And every time his name is mentioned, I'm sorry, you just got to do this. Yeah, if he can do it, anybody can do it. Seriously. So Tara was like, I mean, I've got two things going through my mind. So one, I'd be curious, like, based on what Shanna just said, do you have a similar experience coming out of the election there too as well? And I also wanted to come back to some of the stuff you talked about door knocking, but I'll get that first. Are you coming out of the election in a similar place that Shanna's coming out?
So after the election, this is going to be a little bit weird. Once I realized, oh, okay, numbers wise, like I'm not winning. It was like, okay, what's next? Like, I'm ready for next steps. So, part of that is people that I made connections with over the past year who are thinking about running in 2021, because we have elections again. And then kind of helping them through running for office in 21 and whatever kind of situation we're going to have in 22, because that's a huge election year.
Yeah, big time.
So, definitely PA Stands Up was kind of instrumental in getting me to run for office. There's a great person there. His name is Lev Hirschhorn. I believe he was on your show a couple weeks ago.
Yes, he was. He's fantastic.
It's Lev's fault. Yeah, he's amazing. But if you ever get him on the phone, he's probably going to talk you into running.
Seriously, he was the second person I talked to before I decided to run. So she's totally right.
He was also the second person I talked to, because the first person I talked to was like, I'm going to go call Lev and make him call you. And I was like, why? Why? I don't want to run. And so, they were, everyone there was just instrumental in helping me figure out how to run for office and then actually to run for office. I had a lot of those misconceptions about I don't fit into what a candidate or an elected official is supposed to look like or say or act like, or the particular background or whatever it might be. So like Shanna said, we are not waiting for permission. We are doing it.
Awesome.
I live with the imposter syndrome. It's just kind of like a little buddy that's there and you're like, okay, well, you can just be there and I'm going to be here and we're just going to still get shit done anyway.
I think that's a great way of putting it, because I think so many people like walk through with that dynamic going on for them, right? It's kind of like,
of course,
well, who am I?
Especially
that's
women.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We have this whole other, and I can't speak to it as much, but I know Shanna can, the barrage of bullshit that comes with being a female candidate, a woman candidate, is really like no other. We are constantly have people talking about our appearances and this, that, the other thing, you're too high pitched, you're whatever, your shirt is too low, why are you wearing a turtle? Like, there's all this crap, and then the online harassment is
off the hook.
Wow, it's intense.
Yeah.
So like having other candidates, like, so obviously Shanna and Nicole and I all ran, as well as Lindsay Drew, and some other folks in the area. We had I think
Brittany and Patty.
Yeah, I think there were six of us, maybe. I don't know. And we kind of would talk to each other. So again, not waiting for permission. Like, we're just going to figure this out and we're going to do it.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
No.
I was going to say that dynamic, it just reminds me, I mean, almost verbatim. I remember when, I think, Sean Kitchen interviewed them, but when Summer Lee, Sarah N. Murata, Elizabeth, three of them ran, that's one of the things that they talked about, how important it was to be running with a team of women, strong women, that were going to be supporting each other through the process.
Yeah, absolutely. And they are, involved with PA Stands Up, and it's like this whole extra community of people that are there for you, that are like, hey, do you need anything? I'm here to help. And you're like, what? you are a big, important person, Liz Fiedler, and you want to help me? What?
Like, that never stops, by the way. The first time Nikhil called me, I was like, and he called to congratulate me on the great race we were in the primary. And I was like, oh my God, he knows who I am? Like, what?
And like, as like a person who's like pretty into politics, like, you get like fangirl about Representative Fiedler calling you. You're like, oh my God.
And when Malcolm Kenyatta was out here and oh my, my porch, he took a picture on my porch and it was like, oh my God, this guy's like famous.
Yeah. Like to us.
Yeah. Yes. Right.
Yeah. So there's definitely a lot of like, there is so much excitement there. And that is not because the political machine told us that we could be excited about it. It's because these are people who have ideas that are powerful, that are working their asses off for their community in a way that is shining light that I think, you know, Cumberland County, eventually we will get there. We will have that shining light because right now we just are governed by grievance politics and it's exhausting. Right.
100%. It's like, just want to, for everybody who's kind of tuning in at this point, if we'll take a couple more minutes, I want to kind of follow up with Tara on one question too. We want to let you know that if you got some questions, you got some comments, you want to kind of join the conversation, kind of your experience of, say, running, questions for Tara and Shanna, you can kind of hit that little call-in button if you're listening on the Podbean app, or you can always drop something in the YouTube chat too as well if you like. Want to remind everybody too as well, you can help support this show by becoming a patron for $5 a month, as little as $5 a month, by going to patreon.com/rcpress, or you can give us a one-time donation at paypal.me/rcpress. Or if you go down to the bottom of that app, there's this kind of little button there, a little gift icon. You can hit that. You can send us a cup of coffee, a love balloon, roses, gold mic, a whole bunch of little things out there. But the gifts that you click through Podbean kind of help support the show. And everybody who's out there listening and watching this on YouTube right now, make sure you hit that subscribe button, hit that little bell notification to make sure that you get a notification every time we go live. We love your support. The more you subscribe to the show, the more you subscribe to the podcast, the more people get to know that we're out there, because the little algorithms start doing their little work. So we appreciate that. So Tara, I wanted to go back to one thing you said before we kind of, you know, if anybody again kind of calls in, wants to ask a question, one thing that was curious to me, you said how you loved going out knocking on doors. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really kind of, you know, the nuts and bolts of politics, right? About running for office, getting out there and talking to people. And, you know, I've heard several, you know, this is all anecdotal, but, you know, about how there were people that, you know, were getting, you know, their doors knocked on, who were commenting like, wow, I don't think we've ever had someone out here knock on our door. I mean, I, you know, that you're a Democrat and you're knocking on our door. I mean, what was that like? Did you get any of that kind of experience? Did you get pushback? Were people surprised to see you out there? What was that like?
Well, that was in 19. Obviously, this was all pre-pandemic.
Yep.
In 18 and 19. Yeah, we would have people say nobody's ever knocked my door before. And that was especially in 18. There were a lot of people that said that. And actually, if I'm really honest, nobody had ever knocked my door before 2018. And we have lived here for several years. And I'm a Democrat who votes every election. But we've never had anyone drop literature before 2018 ever, of any political party. So, I mean, we had a range of responses from people. People would be really excited. There's constant comments of, I'm the only Democrat in this area. And it's like, no, you are not. You know, I just knocked, you know, 15 doors before you, all in your neighborhood. There are lots of Democrats in this area. But unfortunately, I think probably in the 80s, the Republicans kind of convinced everybody that only Republicans live in Cumberland County, and everyone just bought it.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of persuading people, you know, when you're knocking doors, that they are not alone. There are Democrats and independents and, you know, people who don't vote straight party Republican in the area. They are not alone on an island somewhere. There is a community here. However, you know, we have to build it up because it has like we have a lot of clubs now, but we are not as united as we could be and hopefully will be in the future. But the door knocking is amazing. Like talking to people about what matters to them, and they're always called the like 2 a.m. issue. Like, what is keeping you up at night? When you wake up with cold sweats, what is it? Like, and we did a lot of those conversations on the phone, which would end up being really, really long conversations because you could be on the phone for 20 or 30 minutes because when you talk to people about what issues are keeping you up at night, especially in 2020, it was a lot of COVID, a lot of health insurance, you know, whereas prior to that, a lot of the conversations at the doors, we have a ton of people in this area who are really concerned about the environment and the damage that we're doing, you know, as far as climate change is concerned.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, what you just said about the, having the long conversations with people, you know, I think the in the popular imagination, so often it's the case where, you know, a politician calls a house and they get the, you know, the phone slammed down in their ear. And not that that doesn't happen, but there's, but there's just as many people out there that, you know, are willing to have a conversation, right? And they're looking there's for somebody so to many. Talk to them.
Yes. So here's the thing is that historically, regular folks in this area, nobody gives a shit about them. You know, their elected officials want one thing from them. It is their vote so that they can continue collecting their government paid salary, their government health care, their government pension, whatever it might be. They want people's votes, and they're not really willing to do the work of listening. And people are, I think the connection there means something. I know it does. It does. It means something when somebody is running for office and they want to help and they want to fix these problems, because someone like me, like I have had very extensive medical debt. Like I have lived paycheck to paycheck. Shanna, I know, has massive school debt. Like we have real problems. And we connect with people who also have real problems and need real solutions, not a bunch of lip service.
Absolutely. So, Shanna, let me turn to you here and remind everybody, too, if you do have a comment, you have a question, you want to call in, you can hit that little call-in button if you listen to the Podbean app. Or if you want to drop something in the YouTube chat, that's cool, too, as well. Shanna, let me ask you, like, so looking forward, I mean, you know, there's so much that there's so much attention that has been, I mean, right now, you know, you read the newspapers, you turn on the TV, and so much is dominated by, you know, the bloviating and the insanity at the kind of the national level. But what I've been struck by, and this is, I've never remember being, you know, in my life, limited life that I've had thus far, I never remember a situation where there were people at the state level, whether, you know, I grew up in New York, I lived in Ohio, I lived in D.C. for a while, and kind of been in Pennsylvania since 2002. I never remember that sense of people saying, yeah, you know what, there's a lot of stuff happening in the nationals. Yeah, yeah, sure. But we really got to concentrate on building state power. And that dynamic is pretty amazing. So where do you see kind of the next steps as we hit like 2021?
I think, it's just not letting up, and it's so, so hard to get people to stay as bought in as they were, especially coming off a presidential year. You know, there's always going to be that group of folks who will just keep doing the work, and Tara and I are in that group. And so like we live, eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff. But so many of the people who were just volunteering with us, like, are they going to just take a nap until 2022? And it's just, it's trying to convince more people to take the leap to run, especially in a municipal year where it's not quite as, I mean, I don't want to say it's not a sacrifice. It's always a sacrifice. Sure. But like in a local election, it's, you don't have to raise as much money. You probably don't have to quit your job. It's a little bit different. And it's just, how do we get people to stay bought into that? And this kind of comes back to like the power of PA Stands Up and organizing around issues and not organizing around candidates. And so as a candidate, like, of course, you know, there are people who are doing this because they love us, but most of the people, I can say pretty confidently, and I think Tara would agree, Most of the people that were working on our campaigns were doing it because they want Pennsylvania to be better. It wasn't just like a Shanna and Tara love fest, although there was plenty of that because we're awesome. You know, like those people are engaged because they know that everything is shit. And so I think there's a little bit of a blessing in this nightmare of the Trump administration refusing to concede and all these lawsuits. And that is people are seeing the true colors of these people in our state government. And I think they're also paying more attention now to like county governments, because how did they handle the vote counts? And you know, the people who are at your polling place, and people are starting to pay more attention, and we just have to be relentless about getting people to stay awake to these issues, and not just to read the headlines, but to do something about it. And so that's, again, I'm just constantly plugging PA Stands Up and our local chapter, Capital Region Stands Up. You know, we're doing this work all the time. It doesn't stop. We take 5 seconds to breathe and maybe take a nap, drink some wine, and then like get right back at it. You know, I've already been to like 4 meetings since the election was over, and
that's
and this is
wine.
The thing. Oh my God, so much wine. But this is the thing, you know, like the election was over and a week later my mom's leadership team was like, hey, you're going to be co-lead. And I'm like, oh, so now I'm like leading the mom's chapter with a good friend of mine, and our leadership team is great, but it's like, there is no rest. It was the same thing. I remember listening to your show right after the 18 election, and Sean was at the rally. I don't even remember what we were rallying about, but it was 2 days after the election. I had just lost, and then I was speaking at a rally at the Capitol, right?
Yep.
Same shit, different year. This year, it was all of these rallies day after day, and Tara was there too. And then I was like co-emceeing the one Saturday when we got the results, because you don't take a break. You don't. It's too important. So I think where we go from here is just, you know, you link arms with these people who were so bought into our campaigns, and we don't let them go away. We just don't. We can't. You know, we can't. There's too much to do.
Awesome. Hey, I think we got Chris. We got a caller, Chris. I think he wants to kind of chime in here. Just connected up with him. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Hey. Oh, okay. Hi. Yeah, this is Chris. How are you all? I had just a slight story. And a question.
Go for it.
I was just, so where I live in Reading, and it's kind of different than Cumberland. I guess if Cumberland County was bigger and had a city in the middle of it, but I guess Carlisle is like a big borough, but it's not, you know, not quite a city. Yeah. But
no, and you got one of the poorest populations in the country. You've got kind of rampant kind of deindustrialization, and you've got like one of the points along kind of like a drug trade, right? I mean, so you're talking about big city problems right in the center of Berks County.
Yeah. I wanted to point to northern Berks County, which is pretty similar to a lot of you know, I mean, that's the start of coal country and all that. And there's federal representative Dan Mooser, Jerry Knowles, Dave Argel, the mayor of Hamburg, 3 county commissioners, and they're all completely useless. And the only thing they care about is getting you to vote for them every 2 to 4 years. And they don't do any constituent service. They don't do anything like that. So it all falls on to Judy Schwenk, who doesn't even represent Northern Berks County. People go to her. And for a long time, she's been the only person. You know, I mean, there are 2 other elected Democrats, but I don't really count them. I'm just being honest. I think they suck. So I think it's really important that, just echoing, I think it's really important that people run as a team, like you both had said there, and find people that you can work together with and eventually get elected together. I just wanted to echo that.
Awesome. And you said you had a question too as well there, Chris?
Yeah. Where do you see yourselves going in 2021 as far as elected office, or are you waiting? That was my question.
I was going to let you go, Shanna.
Yeah, of course you were.
Suddenly we're on MSNBC here. What is this?
Yeah.
It's a serious question.
What are your intentions?
Answer the question.
I'm going to, Chris, it's nice to hear from you. I publicly now will thank you again for all the work that you did for me and then also for Tara in the process. So I don't know. I tell people all the time, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I spent the first third of my working years in the classroom, and I don't really want to do that anymore. I felt my soul come alive when I was running for office, and not because I want to be a senator necessarily, but because I want to be in this work. So I don't know what that looks like for me. I am not running for office. I literally just promised my husband an hour ago that I was not going to run this year. Probably, I mean, you know.
Hold on, Shanna. I think I got Lev on the phone. Hold on. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, God, no.
No. He knows better. I've already had several great conversations with him since the election was over. I don't know. You know, I feel like I had a real knack for being a candidate. I really enjoy the work. I like the policy. So I want to stay in the movement somehow. If I could do that professionally, that would be awesome. I don't see myself running anytime soon, but I do see myself being instrumental in other people's campaigns. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it was less evasive than what was happening in the Georgia debate. So win for me.
How about you, Tara?
No, that completely answers it.
So thank you. It was a good question. It was a little intense. I am not sure what the future holds. You know, in 2019, when I was like, I'm going to get really involved in politics, I really wanted to help other badass women get elected. I wanted to run a campaign and, you know, do what I could to help other people get elected. That is still a goal of mine. That is still something I'm very invested in making happen. I can't even tell you, there are so many municipal elections that are coming up in just a few months. And we have so many amazing candidates here in Cumberland County. I'm not sure about York. I'm sure they have some great folks coming up. And just really investing in these down ballot races, whatever you want to call them, because they're so meaningful. School boards right now, I think we have all seen throughout this year how vital, you know, a good solid school board is. So I'm very, very invested in helping those folks win in 2021. In 2022, I have no idea. My husband has been like, you're not running again, are you?
Well, I saved your yard signs, so.
Oh, God help us all. Yeah.
Well, and also keep in mind, I mean, we may be about to be massively screwed by our terrible government, but like redistricting is happening. So nobody even knows what the hell the lines are going to look like in 22. Correct. So it's a little early, maybe. Oh, yeah. But
sure. No, it's definitely early.
No, awesome. Well, hey,
thanks for the call,
Crispin. Oh, go ahead. You got something else?
All right. Bye.
Oh, yeah.
Oh no. I was just going to say, if you look, the reason that we're optimistic about the gerrymandering is because of the long-term work that happened back in 2015. So, stuff you may not like, I believe it was Tara that said you're not necessarily always running this election for this election, but it's for the 2 to 3 elections down the line. So thank you all for what you're doing. All three of you.
Oh, thanks for calling in, Chris.
Bye.
Man, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
And real quick, just if we look at Stacey Abrams, she didn't just start trying to flip Georgia in 2020. She started that 10 years ago and put a massive amount of work in. And so maybe, you know, by 2030, Cumberland County will be very, very blue.
No, absolutely. So let me ask. So Chris just brought something up, which is this has been a little bit of a frustration for me of late, and I'm curious what your takes are on this. Is like, you met perfect example brings up Dave Argel, right, and Judy Swank in Berks County, and this past Thursday, they were both at Kutztown University for a discussion on civility. Okay. Okay. Good. All right. Good. That is already a positive response from my perspective. Okay. So now look. I have to say is that Judy Swank has done. This is not like, you know, whatever. tax on any one individual. Judy Swank has done kind of some good stuff by the folks, you know, at Kutztown in the area. And after she's been elective, she's listened, she's showed up and that kind of stuff. Is that, but I, after this election, one of my biggest concerns is that there is going to be this push, right, towards like let's, now can't we all just get along? Mm-hmm. Right. And can't we all just get back to civility? And I'm looking at like these letters that have been circulating, that have been signed by the Republican caucus, basically still not accepting kind of the Biden election. Folks that have been enablers, right, and worse of the worst of this like Trump administration, but right here in Pennsylvania, we don't need to go to national to go to this way. And at some point, don't we just got to kind of put the Republican Party to bed, right, and not keep on helping them, like, recover their image? I mean, I don't want to be too harsh, and like, I'm not asking you to go all the way with me on this one, but it seems to me it's like there should not be Democrats right now that are going to help kind of resuscitate the reputations of Republican politicians who have been instrumental in hurting working families across this state.
Yeah, so I will go all the way with you here.
All right.
Because we are now in a situation where we have hundreds of thousands of people who have died.
Right.
And as a result of COVID, as a result of lack of healthcare, as a result of all kinds of things. And people want to say, let's be civil, let's play nice. We don't have to be civil with the people who are trying to oppress us, with the people who are trying to deny us healthcare, which is life, with the people who are trying to deny public education, with the people who are trying to deny us clean air and clean water. There is no civil conversation about the value of our lives that we should be forced to have with the people that we pay. We pay them to do a job, to represent us. And right now, too many, and this is Democrat, Republican, Independent, I don't care which party you are, if you are more interested in representing the corporations of your state, your district, whatever, than you are the actual working people, the unhoused people, the LGBTQ community, the Black Indigenous people, everybody else in your community, if you are more invested in working for those corporations than you are the people, I don't have to be civil to you. Like,
amen to that.
There's no amount of civility that is going to convince people that the rest of our lives have meaning and value.
Yeah, and
there's
let me
amount of civil conversation.
Yeah,
that persuades that.
Absolutely. And let me be clear. This is what I was thinking about this just yesterday. I had to go to the grocery store for a bunch of stuff, and I saw this, like, you know, this person who again, well, I just say I know this person is like was a Trumper and all sort of guy, whatever, right? But just being an absolute ass to the person that was bagging their groceries. Yeah. Right? And I'm like, this is where civility matters. Right. I mean, like, this is where I want civility. I want civility in a situation where this guy, this kid, really, right, is helping you bag your groceries and things like this. This is where we're civil to one another. This is where we recognize people are trying to do jobs. We don't start berate someone because they're too slow or something like this. Right. This is where we want civility. When someone in a position of power is attempting to systematically harm us, that is something of a completely different order. So when I talk about like the problematic of civility, I'm always thinking about like, no, I don't mean in my everyday life, right? I have neighbors that I fundamentally disagree with politically, right? But our kids play together, we're in a neighborhood together, we look out for each other. That's where civility is kind of like part of the social fabric. But when we're talking about this play acting of civility and kind of power politics, it seems to me to be a recipe for disaster.
So it's this thing where the people who are saying you have to be civil, you have to be polite, they are the ones doing the harm to the rest of us. And they are demanding that we are nice and polite to them. And, you know, it's this framing of an entire concept that we just allow it to be framed like that.
Right.
That is not the framing. It's like how the gun lobby frames the gun debate. Like, No, there is no debate. We do not need to have guns in schools. And why my state representative and, you know, Shanna's state senator vote for arming teachers and allowing school resource officers to arrest children. It doesn't make any sense.
She said this a lot more eloquently and very beautifully. And I will just say, with that groan that I let out a few moments ago, I am just so done with this shit. With you know, Republicans don't play by any kind of civility rules. They don't give a flying you know what about what it is to be kind, to care, to show compassion. They don't play like that. They will demand that we play by their rules that they don't play by. And it's bullshit. And so if we're going to get better at this, like, and this is hard as someone who was a bit of a goody-goody when I was a student, and I am a perfectionist and I am a rule follower, and so this is difficult for me, but we are being screwed by the rules. So at a certain point, you either change the rules or you find another freaking way to win and to get around these people. We cannot be, and I think Sean often, you know, shares the same sentiment on the podcast, we cannot be doing things in the same way when they are what they have become. Look at how they have acted under Trump. I mean, it is getting to the point where, like, if we don't put a check on the behavior of the Republican Party, especially in Pennsylvania, what is going to be left for us? So exactly. We need to stop. Yeah. We need to stop thinking we can just, you know, just be nice, just win the real way. Like, no, drag these sons of bitches, because that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, like, the rules of politics changed, I don't even know, 20, 30 years ago. And I think a lot of times Democrats, especially like old party politics, are still playing by these old antiquated rules
yep.
that do not exist in anyone's mind but their own.
No, and it's like winning at all costs is what they've been doing, and it's what we need to do. And it's not about, and I think this is what's difficult, especially as a candidate, it's like how people will perceive you as a human. It doesn't matter. Like, I think at this point, if you're putting yourself out there to be a candidate, you need to understand that a certain amount of risk comes with that, of course, no matter what, but also, like, you are going full steam ahead because this isn't about us. And I think that's why people like Tara and myself ran. It wasn't yeah. ever about us. I don't yeah. care if I'm a senator, I'm still going to do this work, right? But like, we ran with this deep rooted understanding that we need to do things differently in this Commonwealth. And in order to do that, we need to start winning elections. And so while we were all kind of caught up in the nightmare that was 2020, like, I think we also, these movement candidates, have a very clear understanding that we are not running the kind of campaigns that SDCC and HDCC might want us to run, because we're running to win. And that means that you do things differently. That means that you learn how to use social media. Like, don't even get me started about some of, like, the statewide Democrat. I mean, like, look, they have a cult following on their side, and we don't want to have a cult following on ours, but we do want that level of engagement. And so that means you have to do shit differently. And, you know, this is what I'm excited to continue to work on.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Screw their civility.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I mean, it doesn't mean, and again, I have this conversation with so many, with my colleagues that I work with at Kutztown and so on like this, although I've had less, have to have less of these conversations lately. This is one of the good things about COVID, is I don't have to sit through these freaking conversations like this all the time. Sorry to those people that I like the way I work with, not sorry to all those people I don't. But there's, you know, the that whole idea that, look, we're not saying, by saying, like, screw civility, we're not saying that, okay, let's just be assholes to each other. That's not the point. It's like, and I hate this kind of, like, on-off, like, either-or thinking of just saying, no. We're talking about saying, if you're going to play, look, first of all, number one, I mean, this goes back, you know, to Alinsky, right? Power is not a dirty word, right? We got to get past that. And actually, that's the purpose of politics, right? To exercise power. And so to exercise power, and we're working in a context in which you have a party that is fundamentally about destroying working people, well, guess what? You got to fight, right? And you don't fight with, you know, if they're bringing guns, you don't bring thank you cards. right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not how this works. And it doesn't mean that we have to kind of act like they do, but it means that our politics have to be aggressive. And, you know, Naomi Klein always talked about the need to build muscular movements, right? And mm-hmm. that idea that collectively and through solidarity that we can act, and we can act aggressively, we can act through kind of direct action, and we can insist that we're not going to have our lives destroyed by these people. And that is not kind of incivility, right? That is self-care. Right?
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, and it's about not apologizing for it. Like, I am a pro-choice candidate who believes in the environment and doesn't want my politicians to kill me. You know what I mean? Like,
you radical socialist,
right? Like,
exactly.
This is like Republicans have embraced an accused rapist to hold the highest office in the land. And I will literally never forgive that. I can't. Like, mm-hmm. I can't. I've seen too many friends go through assault. I just cannot forgive that. And they have not apologized.
Correct.
And they will not apologize. Like, we, again, have got to understand that the rules of politics changed decades ago, and we've got to get better.
Well, fantastic. Well, I'm looking at the time here. I'm already keeping you guys past when I told you when I thought you were going to keep. But I am so thrilled to have this conversation. And you know, I hope that, you know, in 2021, when we get past the holidays, that I'd love to have you all back on to kind of see where things are at some point. I mean, I think that the perspectives that you both have brought to this, I mean, not just this conversation tonight, but two movements on the ground, have just been astonishing. And I can't tell you, like, how in awe I've been of the work that you've all done out there. It's been so inspiring. And I, you know, I would just say personally, especially when we've seen, like, you know, all sorts of difficulties going on in terms of, like, you know, our local union and kind of the cuts that are happening in higher education, and felt like kind of like a real kind of down point, you know, especially the toll that, you know, Trump and all this stuff has taken on everybody. When I saw the races that you all were doing out there, and I'll include, like, Nicole in this, Tara Zirinsky in this, like, you know, Rick Kajewski mm-hmm. in this, I mean, and obviously Summer Lee, Sarah Namorado, Elizabeth Fiedler, and more. I mean, I could add on Katie Muth, what she's been doing has been freaking amazing. Mm-hmm. It's been so inspiring. And just kind of like, it encourages me, like, especially, and I hope this does this for other people that are listening to as well, to see the work that you've done on the ground and say, remember, when you get to those down spots, when you get to the places where you're just like, God, this is exhausting or I'm tired, remember, look, that there's hope and you're not alone, right? And you've got folks like this who are building campaigns for exactly that purpose, so that we don't have to kind of act in isolation and act alone and act out of desperation and despair. So thank you both for that.
Yeah, thank you for those words.
Yes.
Oh, you got it. Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, you know, I'll take my little fanboy moment myself. Right. So I'll praise you all. How's that?
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, listen, thank you both for joining us tonight. Thank you all for tuning in both on YouTube and here in Podbean. Thank you for the comments and for the suggestions. And want to remind everybody that you're going to be able to pick this up on a regular podcast. If you don't already subscribe to our podcast, you can get it on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Look for Raging Chicken, Raging Chicken Out the Coop podcast. If you're listening on YouTube, make sure you smash that subscribe button, hit that little notification, and make sure you know when we go live. And of course, you can support this show by going to patreon.com/rcpress. You can become a patron for as little as $5 a month. You can give us a one-time donation by going to paypal.me/rcpress. But what has really sustained us ever from the beginning is knowing that kind of our support comes predominantly for people who support us through membership or through Patreon. So patreon.com/rcpress, a little $5 a month. Appreciate you all. So thank you again, once again, and big round of applause for Shanna Danielson and Tara Shakespeare. This is what I wish we could be like in a public venue right now, because just to watch the people get up out of their seats for the both of you. But thank you, and I, you know, look forward to, may this kind of 2021 be the year that we kind of build some really significant power at this point.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
Onward.
Onward we go. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Thank you all for tuning in. And special thanks once again to Jonathan Mann, who's given us our intro and outro song. There are no people in the future. This is actually kind of like a weirdly kind of dark yet happy song, which perfectly captures this. Thank you all for tuning in to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. See ya!